You're listening to Convenience Matters, brought to you by NACS. We'll talk about what we see at stores and what the future may hold for our industry.
Fuel's releases from underground storage tanks don't often rank among the most common causes of UST compliance violations. That's according to a new report. We're going to talk about what the most common causes are and what you can do to avoid them so they don't affect your bottom line. Welcome to Convenience Matters. Today, we're talking about UST compliance and some of the issues related to that. You know, it doesn't sound like the thing that, is the often top of mind, but fines, not something you want to deal with. And we're going to talk about some of the things that relate to compliance, what you can do, what they mean, and why it matters. So I'd like to introduce our guest today, Clay Moore, Senior Director of Product at Leighton O'Brien. Welcome, Clay.
Hey, thank you for having me on your show today.
So as I just said a minute ago, nobody really wants to hear about compliance. It's a chore. So how about we reframe this a little bit and talk about it a little differently? This is about avoiding fines, bad press, and expenses related to potential violations. So is that a better way to look at this whole issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the industry, what you see is, you know, at convenience stores, they really are focused on profits with like coats and cigarettes, for example, but they really don't really see the profitability from the fuel. So compliance is really making sure that you're running a tight ship, you're being very effective, you're managing your fuel loss in a way that you become more profitable in that area. So when you talk about, you know, reducing fines, it's not just about, you know, not getting penalized for doing something you should. It's about doing what you should to make sure that you're not only profitable, but you also avoid the fines. And some of these fines can be very excessive, like thousands and thousands of dollars, which can actually, you know, shut down many businesses.
And I had mentioned there's a new report, and that's something that your team undertook. It's called SEE, Where It Hurts, the top 10 UST compliance violations and their potential risks and costs to your convenience store. So, it hits right where our industry is and covers something that's worth discussing more. So can you take us through how did this research come about? What were you ultimately looking to uncover, and what did you ultimately uncover?
Well, I guess it really started last year at the U.S. The National Tanks Conference in Pittsburgh. When I attended that show, I met with lots of folks, a lot of state officials, you know, a lot of companies that were there. A lot of them were about remediation and fixing things after the fact. As I started talking to them, I love data, first off. And so I love getting useless data and making use of it. So when they started showing me where all this data is located, I started, saying, well, what are the biggest problems? I've been in the industry for a number of years, and this is where, just trying to figure out what their pain points are. And so when we started getting access to thousands and thousands of records of what these NOVs were, I couldn't help but say, well, what are the patterns? As a data scientist, as a data analyst, we start looking at it and like, well, where are the biggest problems in the industry? And are there anything that we can do to fix? So that's kind of how it started, how it came about. And next thing you know, I'm digging into row after row, looking at the patterns, focused on several states, California, New York, which are, of course, two states that have really, stringent regulations, Arizona, Illinois, and Texas. So those states kind of made the lion's share of the data that we're looking at just because of the availability of the records.
And they're also top 10 states in terms of number of fueling outlets.
Absolutely.
Clay, when I started with NACS back in 2000, one of the first jobs I was tasked with, I was a lobbyist, was reforming the Leaking Underground Storage Tanks Program. Mm-hmm. And so you think about that nice acronym, LUST. I thought, whoa, this is kind of cool. What is that? And then I got into it, oh, man, this is not what I thought it was, right? But it was the perception of those not in the industry is – these tanks represent a threat to the environment. You've got some communities trying to stop the installation of new gas stations because they think number of reasons. One of them is what's going to happen to our water supply? You had a big issue back in the 90s and early 2000s on MTBE remediation and water from leaking tanks and stuff. But what your study really points out is the leak is not that common. Yes, we have leaks, we have releases, but it really comes down to if we are maintaining our systems appropriately. And that's what NACS advocated for in the 05 Energy Policy Act was make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. There are requirements to upgrade your tanks, there are requirements to inspect your tanks, there's requirements to maintain your tanks. And the idea was make sure we're all doing the right thing to prevent anything bad happening. And so you see these numbers of NOVs and you go, oh my goodness, people aren't doing their job. But really, for the most part, Jeff and I are talking, it's mostly administrative, right? I mean, what were the number one things you found when you're looking at this? Were they fundamental operational deficiencies or were they more paperwork violations, just not crossing the T's and dotting the I's?
Yeah, the majority of them were missing paperwork. They were not, you know, just doing the due diligence because, you know, most C-stores are focused on the customer there in front of them. You know, they're selling the products there on location. So paperwork kind of gets left behind. And the majority of what we were seeing were they were missing paperwork. And then they were inspected and they're like, well, I don't have that paperwork. That was 6 months ago. They couldn't figure it out. And you're right. The shift in the mindset with convenience stores is that a lot of people look at what's the minimum I can do so I don't get fined, as opposed to how soon can I find the issue and fix it before it becomes a problem? Because if you're doing that side, being proactive, then you're doing what you should be doing while these regulations, you know, exist in the first place, is to make sure that you stay on top of things so that nothing leaks. But like I said, the biggest fail was, of course, you know, missing release detection paperwork. And I mean, it wasn't that, you know, they were leaking. It was just they didn't have the documentation to support that. And so those are a lot of NOVs coming from just that one issue.
You know, Jeff, I mean, I listen to what Clay's saying what's in his report, and there's a linkage. The paperwork seems like a nuance. It seems like, why should I be getting fined for not doing my paperwork, blah, blah, blah. But the paperwork is really just designed to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So Fuels Institute, we did a study about 2 years ago where we took samples from 135 underground storage tanks and tested them for a variety of parameters. The one we were looking for most was water contamination. The number of tanks that had too much water in them, these were diesel tanks, was just alarmingly high. Now, that doesn't mean they have a functional problem, but if they're not checking their system routinely, unexpected challenges can happen. And so the paperwork, the administrative duties are really just kind of saying, yeah, I'm checking my systems. Clay, to your point, if you're checking your system the way you're supposed to, you can find out if you have a problem before you have a fuel quality degradation incident that ruins a customer's engine.
Exactly.
And related to that, John, the other point you hit upon is really, you know, I think the focus of this report is paperwork, not fuels leaks. But when you go to a zoning hearing and somebody doesn't want a station built because there's been X number of violations, et cetera, it's paperwork in many cases. But you know, at the zoning hearing, that may not be communicated. It's just like there's been a violation. Violations only mean one thing to the general public, means something else to our industry. So there's also, you know, I think that really important point to look at where it is important to hit these marks because it can avoid something bigger, but it also can avoid something bigger in terms of how you are perceived in the industry or in the community.
Yeah. You know, brand impact is something that I see happen all the time. You know, as the C-store really focuses on the customer experience and really making sure that the user has the best experience, you know, that sort of mentality is very beneficial because if you have a clogged filter or slow flow or not availability, this is going to impact the brand whether you realize it or not. And so, you know, being that diligent on your release detection is the fundamentals where you can build off of that. I was telling Sally just the other day, one of my colleagues is, of course, you know, it's like compliance health is like, you know, counting calories in your regular health. I mean, you basically are counting calories, you're working out. The byproduct of that is, you know, good fitness and lifestyle. you have so much benefits from that. So when you're talking about compliance, it is the same thing. It's counting your fuel loss. It's counting your, it's making sure you do your paperwork. This sort of, healthy compliance lifestyle, the result is you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're not leaking, you're more profitable, and thus avoiding fines and of course, customer impact and brand impact across the industry.
Clay, when I've gone out and visited retailers who are kind of on the cutting edge of taking the next step towards underground storage tank maintenance and product integrity protection, I mean, they're investing a lot of money in new technology to make sure that their tank systems are as safe and as effective as possible, and that their fuel quality is as protected as possible, because they know, look, it still happens. You take your car to the mechanic, well, you probably had bad fuel, because the mechanic doesn't know what the problem is. So point to somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. And so many retailers are stroke checks to make those things go away. But making sure that you have a high quality product, make sure that you are doing your utmost to ensure that when your customers fill up their vehicle at your store, that your brand reputation is protected, is so important. And understanding that some of that just comes into the regulations are a pain. Nobody likes to have to go through and do all these paperwork and all this administrative duty. It's an actual pain in the rear, but it ensures that you're doing the right thing, that you're doing your due diligence. You're taking care of your equipment. You're taking care of your fuel. You're taking care of your customers. You're protecting against loss. You're protecting against fines. You're also protecting against brand damage. It's something that can easily be swept under the carpet, but I love what your report does, because it points out the importance of doing the right thing. And I'd be curious to know, what kind of response are you getting from industry, from regulators, since that paper came out?
Well, my LinkedIn is blown up. I get a lot of people text messaging and asking questions. I had a gentleman the other day was asking about, is there a group of people that you can go consult, like the UST, round table, a lot of people had questions of where, how can I find these things out? And so a lot of the websites, like the Illinois website, very helpful as far as being able to get in and find out where your NOVs were, your history. The EPA programs like the USD Finder, also very helpful. A lot of people were asking, well, what kind of paperwork do I need? What is there? And I think that's the other part, is a lot of times when you're talking about doing what you should be doing, you don't actually have a list of, this is a documentation. Like, if you're going to go get, married, you're going to need your birth certificate, your driver's license or whatever. But that list, that checklist, a lot of times people don't know what they don't know. Now, there are a lot of regulations, of course, like California with ISD and New York and the 10-day reporting. Every state has a little bit different paper requirements. And I think that the first step is really knowing what you need to have and being proactive of knowing that, as opposed to being inspected and say, hey, where's this? I didn't know I needed it. I did it. There's an ATG on the wall. Everything's fine. But this is where you can be passing release detection and not leaking, but failing compliance. And that's where you get those violations and fines. Some of the fines that we were looking at, also, we spoke to several large C stores that were dealing with some of these NOVs and kind of got their input. And some of these, just like an SPCC plan, was like a $25,000 fine. Oof. For one, didn't have the plan, the paperwork, the plan, So not only is it, a huge impact financially, but just organizationally wise, it just makes better sense to know what you need ahead of time instead of at the end.
I think it's the other point that you talked about earlier, John, is just like the idea of bad gas, and people will say, well, so and so must be their problem, because it's either a mechanic or the customer, and you get a rep as the place that has, well, I saw so-and-so had a violation, so therefore you shouldn't trust it. That's really difficult to overcome. And no amount of talking to somebody can usually make that right. So, Clay, we won't go through all 10 of these things that, that you have in your report, but in looking at what you've dove into, and by the way, John and I, we also love diving into data, so you're speaking our language. Are there a couple things that, that you, when you came out of this, you said there's some commonalities that people might be able to look at, like, here's one thing you need to do, here's another thing you do, like I said, two or three things that that might give people a good idea about what you saw to avoid some of these top 10 things?
Well, you know, paperwork is one thing. The other thing is like the water. You know, water was, you know, had water ingress. You know, when that, when the ATG beeps in the back and you have a water alarm, you know, actually figure out what's going on. Those are some of the earlier indicators. Like you mentioned bad fuel, usually water ingress, you know, with, you know, phase separation and, you know, microbial growth and those sort of things. Water is definitely the enemy there. But one, the main thing that you can do is change the mindset of from, you know, what's the minimum to where can I actually be a proactive. There are certain things like your day-to-day variance, like what I started with, what I sold, you know, what I should have at the end of the day. That reconciliation, doing your checkbook for your business is something that you figure everyone does. It's common sense. But one of the violations that I picked up on was the variance control. That was such a huge, large fines, and it's something you should be doing daily. Just knowing, are you losing fuel? Are you, you know, profitable? You know, just from a business standpoint, that made just like logic for me. So just doing what you should be doing daily just to see if you're profitable, those were things that you could definitely be proactive to. So yeah, hopefully that answered the question there.
And the other part is they have to know what they're doing. There's operator training requirements and underground storage tank regulations, and so many firms out there are offering the training. So if a retailer doesn't know what they're supposed to do, you can try to read the regs, which good luck. That's always fun. Or make a couple calls. There are so many sources of support that can help them figure out how to comply, and also give them some best practices. Now, we published a best practice for managing your underground storage tank for diesel. It's on our Fuels Into website. It has just basic things you can do to make sure that you're protecting water, your fuel quality. But it goes into, it's not a compliance tool, but it's all about doing the right thing. And I think that's something you've been saying a lot, Clay, is do the right thing. If you do the right thing, you're going to save yourself money, and you're going to save yourself not only compliance money, but equipment money down the line. And that's so incredibly important, because you're right, a $25,000 fine is a huge chunk out of your annual profit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the $25,000, just that one thing. If I'm losing 20 gallons of fuel a day, just 20 gallons at $3.50 a gallon for the entire year, that's $25,000. Now, if I were, you know, losing money, if someone stole a beer or a Coke or cigarettes inside the C-store, people are all, you know, very focused on that. But because gas at the C-store level is a number, and if you're selling 200,000 gallons of gas a month, 20 gallons may not seem like much, but it adds up. And so by really focused on making sure you're not losing fuel, that you're not leaking, doing the best practices, I mean, the return on investment for just doing a little extra, you know, paperwork is far, you know, pays for itself.
And I think it's really important when you say losing 20 gallons, somebody doesn't understand the industry. Go, you're losing 20 gallons. Where's it going? It's probably going to your secondary containment device. It's not going into the soil. It's not going into groundwater. It's going into a secondary containment. It's still lost because you can't sell it, but it's not contaminating anything. But then you have to go in and you have to pump your tank and you have to fix it and do all, and that's money on top of money. So not only are you losing the opportunity to sell those gallons, now you got to go in and remediate your system, not the ground, but the system to fix it. And that, I mean, that's just more money on top of money. So it's just so much easier to do the right thing early on.
Well, not only that, you know, one good point you make is that it's not all about, you know, a leak when you lose 20. It could be the ATG tank gauge calibration. You know, your tank chart that's in the gauge that's often wrong, that what numbers you're reporting are erroneous. So really being on, you know, making sure, as far as best practices, that you have the right ATG programming that is going to trigger an alarm when it should. Make sure that you have the right tank gauge program so that your county lines up with your cells, so you really know where your problems are to identify them quickly and resolve.
I have a question for both of you as we wrap up this discussion. You know, there's a transition to EVs, and EVs don't require underground storage tanks. But how does this discussion affect the transition to EVs? Are there things that we need to take into account as you look at adding charging that UST violations and compliance play a role in? We'll start with Clay.
Well, I was very fortunate to speak with one of our C-store, you know, chains that have a lot of, you know, sites in Europe, Norway and Sweden. Over the past 4 or 5 years, they've seen a dramatic drop in fuel cells because they've really embraced EV in Europe. And what they've expressed is that where they were very profitable before with the fuel, you know, they could get away with playing it a little bit loose as far as accounting and making sure you're tracking your dollars, your budget, if you would. What I see this coming into is that now more than ever, as EVs, you know, start to become more and more popular, that you're really going to have to, you know, tighten your belt on your fuel to make sure you're being profitable. Make sure that you don't have these fines, that you don't have, you know, loss. Because, I mean, if you look at it just from, you know, you were selling 200,000 gallons. Now you're selling 100,000. Now I've got to be more profitable on that 100,000. And that is exactly doing the right thing, being compliant, making sure you're not getting fined, but you're basically really in more control of that, of the fuel flow as it goes through your location.
And I think in the U.S., Jeff, I mean, the transition is going to take a very long time. I did an analysis that even if we were to ban combustion engine sales by 2035, in 2035, combustion engine vehicles, liquid fuel vehicles, still be 85% of the market. And by 2050, it's going to be 40% of the market. And we're nowhere near getting to 100% EV sales by 2035. So we're going to continue selling fuel for a very long time. So maintaining your system, you can't assume you're going to be closing it in 10 years because there's no demand. You can't ignore it. That's not the case. It does play into the Fire Protection Association's decision on how far chargers need to be set back from the gasoline service to make sure there's no fire danger. So all these things go into it. So there's going to be definitely some balancing to be done in terms of how we bring both transportation energies services to the market. But I need to stress, especially in the U.S., if you're selling gasoline, you're not going to stop selling gasoline in 10 years because there's still going to be tremendous demand. And that is in the most optimistic electrification scenario, which I think is not feasible. So we have to maintain it because this is a long-lived asset even today, and it's going to continue to be a long-lived asset for a very long time.
Yeah. I would add that I do believe that EV is not the silver bullet that just does it all. I mean, fuel itself, finding cleaner ways to burn fuel is going to be the way because, I mean, at the end of the day, no one's going to go and sit for their car to be charged for 30 minutes at a convenience store. You know, they're going to charge that at home. You know, but I mean, cleaner fuel burning and better resources, you know, in the petroleum, I think that's still, yeah, it's going to be 40, 80 years before you see any sort of really decline.
Yep.
So Clay, if they're hanging out charging their EV for a half hour and they need something to read, maybe there's that's an opportunity to take a look at the document you put together. Can you tell everybody how to find it so they can read it, whether or not they're charging their EV or they just want to learn more about UST violations and compliance?
Yeah, so if you want to find a copy of the book, just go to our website at LeightonOBrien.com. That's LeightonOBrien.com. And there's lots of resources there and lots of good reading. I said it was a really fun project that I got to work in, and I'm still digging into more and more data, as you'll see. But it's been really eye-opening to see the different levels from being proactive and paperwork to some of the other violations that are out there and how they can just really be avoided.
Well, keep us posted on that, Clay, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to Convenience Matters.
Convenience Matters is brought to you by NACS and produced in partnership with Human Factor. For more information, visit convenience.org.